We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham. Somehow, some way, Oklahoma State beats Iowa State. Did not look pretty for a long time. I'm sure Kyle Porter never doubted the Cardiac Cowboys for a minute, did you?
Well, I certainly didn't tweet that it was over.
Who did that?
The only reason I didn't tweet is because I didn't want what happened to you to happen to me. I think we were all right there in thinking that that Oklahoma State was going to get beat by a 1-4 Iowa State team in Stillwater.
I learned a valuable lesson, Kyle.
What was that?
In that phrasing is everything. As I'm typing this tweet, in my head I'm thinking, what are the worst losses of the Gundy era? This one would be up there. And instead of typing this would be up there, I said this is up there. And what? As I proofread it, I was like, what the hell? They're not coming back. I'll just send it anyway. Even though I was thinking this one would be up there if they lost. I was so down on the way they were playing that I was like, whatever, I'll just send it. Who cares?
I don't even think there's anything to justify. I mean, the game was pretty much over. And then, and this is what I don't get. And it's sort of, I guess, frustrating if you're an Oklahoma State fan, is you play like just garbage for 42 minutes. And Gundy said this afterwards. He essentially said, we played like garbage for 42 minutes and then we played great for the last 18. Why? Like, what is the switch that you flip all of a sudden? Like, I just don't. I don't know. I don't understand if they just feel like they have to have their backs against the wall to play well. But it's really odd, and I don't really understand it. And it's certainly not a great formula for trying to win a Big 12 title.
No, and it's a kind of a theme you've harped on all season, is why can't they just take care of business against teams they're better than? Why can't they just go out and win comfortably? It's a huge issue. I do think there's a reason for it. You know, we all wonder, well, why don't they play as well in the first half as they do the second half? Well, I think a lot of it has to do with teams throwing things at them they have not seen on film. I think Iowa State's coach did a really good job of throwing some things at them that they were not ready for and they could not react to. And they had a lot of guys that were out injured, which that's no excuse. But it's frustrating in that you look at up and down OSU's roster. Okay, on offense, they have studs everywhere. They should be better, I think, on offense, more consistent for sure. And it's even more frustrating looking up and down on defense. They have some dudes on defense. Like, they passed the eye test. Defensive line, probably the biggest strength on the team. They can run hockey line changes at the defensive line. You look at linebacker, they have guys like Jordan Burton who are running away with the Uni Heisman and can make plays. You look at the secondary, the safeties, I guess Stearns was out, so that's a big loss. But Trey Flowers is one of the better ones in the Big 12. Their corners, you know, they're hit or miss, but you're going to have a weakness somewhere on your defense. I just feel like they should be better on both sides of the ball more consistently than they are, and that's the most frustrating thing.
Yeah, I liked what you said about I thought the Jordan Stearns thing was a big deal. People were talking about it. I don't know, but he's definitely, I mean, the heart and soul of that defense and potentially the team. But that doesn't really account for what was going on offense. And I don't know. So after the game, and Mason Rudolph said this, and somebody else, I think Jalen McCluskey also said it. He said that Iowa State's defense did some stuff different than what Oklahoma State thought they were going to do. My question is, who cares what Iowa State's defense is doing? Just run your plays. Like, and this goes back to, like, I think I like that Mike Yurcich changes their offense a lot for who they're playing, but you run into issues whenever a defense like Iowa State's, which is below average, is terrible, doesn't do what you think they're going to do. And you go back to the Dana Holgorsen, the Todd Monken stuff. They just ran the eight plays that they ran, and it didn't matter what the defense did, you know? And so right. I am worried, I guess, about the future of the offense going forward, if that's the case. If a team like Iowa State can change a few looks and the offense doesn't know how, and Oklahoma State's offense doesn't know how to respond.
Well, I loved what you wrote about that, in that when you mentioned they need to just run lesser plays better and faster.
Yeah.
I completely agree. And it kind of goes back to our video game corollary, you know, where, you know, you need a fourth down conversion. There's a play in your playbook, you know it's going to get it. And it proves kind of what you're saying. They run too many plays. Their fourth down play, they're throwing to someone named Britton Abbott. Is that correct?
I mean, they might as well have been throwing to me or you.
I mean, throwing to Little Country out there, bringing them from the basketball team. I mean, what are you doing? And the most frustrating thing for me, Kyle, on the offensive side of things is there is no – it seems to me it is all or nothing. It's either a touchdown or a three and out. And I looked up their third down conversion rate. They're 50th in the country in third down conversions. That kind of illustrates the lack of sustained drives that they're having. They really – it's home run, touchdown, or nothing. And I think Ben Grogan's only attempted, 10 field goals, which I think is in the top half of the Big 12. But it kind of illustrates they're not getting down there consistently. And if they are getting down there, it's all or nothing. So that to me is the most frustrating thing, is that there doesn't seem to be a rhythm or sustained success in the offense. They just get hot and hit boom, 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 touchdown, which it won them the game. I guess you can't complain about that. It's just that aspect to me is the most frustrating part.
Yeah. Well, they're 50th in the country in third down conversion, but they're like 35th, or they were 35th in points per drive. So it's like, I mean, you're exactly right. They're either scoring and you know, getting points, or they're punting. And the outlier still to me is the Baylor game, when they really controlled the clock with their offense and kept the ball for the entire game. Do you think they're glad that James Washington was able to play on Saturday?
Well, they don't win the game if he doesn't, Kyle. Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I was absolutely shocked that he played.
It was a little weird.
It was weird, wasn't it? Like, no one expected him to play. Then all of a sudden, like, he was ruled out by, you know, the radio broadcast. Then he was ruled in by the radio broadcast. Yeah. Seems like that was kind of a game time decision. And I'm no doctor, but when I see someone get absolutely knocked unconscious and his limbs stiffen up, I'm surprised he got cleared. Look, I'm not a doctor. Obviously, they cleared him. He looked fine. He looked just as great as always. I'm very surprised that he played, but it is a good thing for OSU he did, because they don't win the game without him.
No, they don't. And if you noticed, this was probably easier to see on TV than at the game, but he was very much avoiding contact. And maybe that's something he always does, like over the middle and stuff, but he was kind of going down before he would get hit. And by all means, he should, you know.
I'm sure they coached him up on that.
Yeah, for sure. But it was, I didn't like the language where they said he's going to play, but they're going to use him as little as possible if necessary. That's not I don't know. That's not a good look.
Well, they used him a bunch because they needed to.
Because they had to have him, you know. And, you know, I wrote this on Sunday, but he is legitimately, you could make the argument that he's the best deep threat wide receiver in Oklahoma State history. His yards per catch is like 2 or 3 yards ahead of the second place receiver. I can't remember who's second. It might be Rashawn, but he's almost 20 yards a catch, and he did it again on Saturday. It's crazy, because Mason Rudolph said after the game, you know, it's getting harder to throw it deep because guys know what we're doing, and yet they continue to do it. It's pretty impressive that you go out there and everybody knows you're going deep to James Washington, and you do it over and over again. And Mason Rudolph racks up 350 yards and doesn't look that great in the process. So I don't know. I don't know what to think of this team. The season's halfway over, and we're right where we were last year, where the team seems to be good, but you don't really know what you're getting week to week.
Well, back to what you said about the Iowa State defense throwing things at them. Mason also mentioned, you know, they're playing the deep ball. It makes it really hard to throw the deep ball, like you said. And the big problem is Mason is not hitting the short throws. His completion percentage was way down in this game.
Yeah.
It seems to me the higher percentage throw for him are the deep bombs than they are the 5-yard outs, which is just perplexing. I think that was a frustrating part throughout the game, too. Mike Gundy said quarterback played average, missed some throws, missed a lot of throws. So that also hurts, too, the play calling. If your quarterback's not able to hit the short ones, it kind of limits what you can do. And that's confusing, is it not, with Mason?
Just average. Yeah, it's weird. His completion, you know, I looked it up. His completion percentage last year was like 62, which is pretty good, given that they're not really playing the air raid anymore, which is what Whedon played in. And his career average, I think, was like 68 or something like that.
Goodness.
Maybe 69. I don't know. It was near 70. It was preposterous. But Mason's this year is like 2% lower, 1% lower. It feels a lot lower. It feels like it's like 5% lower than last year. But he's had I think it's mostly because he's had a couple games like this game, and maybe it was the Pitt game, where he's been in the 50s. And it just, you're right, it doesn't make sense. He's missing these like 10 to 12 yard throws that are not, and he's missing them badly. Like, some of these sideline throws are not even close.
Right.
And then he's, you know, pinpoint 45 yards away to James Washington. So I
just pure timing on a 60-yard bomb. It's just right where it needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand, but we do need to we need to toast some players this week. So it's time for the Coop Aleworks toast of the week. Excuse me. Coop Aleworks, brewing great tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale. I needed a few of those at halftime on Saturday. Or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Aleworks. And please remember to drink responsibly. Who are you toasting, Carson?
Well, the obvious one would be James Washington, but I'm going to go off the board here. I'm going to give it to the offensive line.
Oh, wow.
Mason Rudolph, clean pocket on 42 of 47 dropbacks.
Yeah.
That would not have happened last year. I go back to the Baylor game where he was just assaulted and injured in the game. So I'm going to give a toast. I'm going to give let's see here. Let's give him a porter. I'm going to give him a porter for the Grand Sport Porter.
I
toast
like that
to them.
Like
they brought their lunch pail, and they obviously have done a much better job this season in the running game. And I think they kept a clean pocket for Mason Rudolph to allow that comeback to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Because
I know who you're going to toast. That's why I didn't want to take it.
Who do you think I'm going to toast?
Siner. The punter. Zach the punter, which is a great Twitter name. It's his name on Twitter.
Zach the punter. I didn't even think about that. The one that I actually...
Oh, well, then can I toast to him,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
That's your guy. You said Siner for Heisman.
Siner for Heisman. We need to print the shirts. Print the shirts.
Which one does he get? I'll give him the elevator because he kicks it so high and
Vader.
Drops it. He drops it down right where it needs to be. Give him a Vader. But no, he literally was a huge part in that comeback. And I read somewhere where all those the touchdown or less wins last year, the four games they won by a touchdown or less, he pinned teams in there deep.
Yeah,
I think eight or so times. He's just done an exceptional job punting the football.
Yeah, and he got a shout out from Gundy and his. In his press conference on after the game.
Did he? What did he say?
He just said, 2-9 was great or something like that.
Did he say, did he call him his name or his number?
I don't know what he called him.
He called Ramon 7 and Ramon. He gave him the double name.
Okay, I'm going to toast, actually. This is an off-the-board toast, just because the Washington thing is too easy and I didn't think of Siner and Rudolph's easy and whatever. Jeff Carr. He didn't play that much, but he had a huge run in the fourth quarter to set up the game winner, and he got a lot of praise from Mike Yurcich afterwards. So I'm gonna toast a DNR to Jeff Carr. Actually, I had a buddy, an A&M buddy, over on Friday night. We were watching the Clemson Boston College game, and he hadn't had any Coop yet, and I gave him a DNR. And he said, man, this tastes like a milkshake. I said, yeah, thick and delicious. That's what it is. And so he. Yeah, he enjoyed that. But, yeah, I thought Jeff Carr was, like I said, he didn't play a ton, but that was a huge run at the end of the game, 33-yard run, when Oklahoma State needed to get the go-ahead touchdown.
Yeah, he's kind of the forgotten man in the backfield. And Mike Gundy even said, we need to do more. Like, he called him, like, the draw running back. He's great on the draws.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to see him in passing downs get in there on third down, maybe.
How quickly did Justice Hill get pulled after the fumble in the fourth quarter?
I think there were Back to the Future flames on the field from Gundy yanking him off the field. Just tread marks left.
But apparently it was, I think he came off the field because of the fumble, but I do believe there was a minor injury. It looked like the training staff was checking him out on the sideline, and apparently they said something about it on the radio afterwards.
Well, I got to be honest. I didn't even see it because I was going upstairs to set up my live shot. So I missed the fumble. Was it on the exchange or was it as he was carrying the ball?
It was on the exchange. And I don't know if it was totally Justice Hill's fault. There was a little Rudolph small hands action going on or whatever is wrong with his hands.
Right.
So
it's not completely his fault, then, you're saying?
Yeah. No, I don't think it was. But still, Gundy got him off the field as fast as possible.
He put Rennie in there ASAP?
No, he put Barry Sanders in, actually.
Wow. I feel bad for Barry Sanders. It seems like every single time he gets a carry, he just gets leveled at the right at the line of scrimmage, and they never block for him.
Yeah.
It's like he's the opposite of what he like. Everyone loves him, but it's almost you feel like he's like the guy on the team no one likes because no one blocks for him.
Yeah.
I know that's not the case. I wish they would block a little better when he gets his chances.
That's funny. I got a question for you, Carson. Do you think Glenn Spencer is coaching for his job this year?
I think I do. I think moving him up to the box was an indication that there was admission from either himself or Gundy or both that things aren't working. And it kind of goes back to my original point in that this defense should be better than it is. The excuse of not having good enough players doesn't hold any water for me anymore. They passed the eye test. So what's the issue? I mean, at times, Kyle, they are 2007, 2008 bad on defense, especially in that first half. My goodness, just everything they did was just awful. So, I mean, at a certain point, you have to look at the results, don't you? And the results have not been good since 2013.
No, they haven't. OKC Dave wrote a really good piece on Friday about how Glenn Spencer had one elite defense, and that was 2013. And I think that sort of set the tone for what we thought he would be as a defensive coordinator. But the three defenses since then have been not average. They've been kind of bad, you know, nationally below average. And it's hard because the Big 12, you're grading on a different scale, right? Like you can't say like, okay, well, we should have a top 10 or 15 defense, even though you did in 2013. You had a top 10 defense nationally in 2013, because I think in the Big 12 defenses get worn down more. It's easier to have a good offense than it is to have a good defense. So there's certainly a sliding scale, but I don't know. It's not trending in the right direction. And I don't know. I think he might be as well. And that's a weird thing to say about a team that's, you know, 14 and what, five over its last 19 games.
And they get huge turnovers at opportune times too, which you go back to the Central Michigan game. They won the game if the offense just doesn't botch it at the end. And there are times this has to be frustrating for Mike Gundy too, Kyle, especially because they've put more resources into recruiting the defensive side of the football. Mike Gundy's talked about that ad nauseum. Like they've made a concerted effort to get the depth on the defensive line, which they now have. They've put the effort and resources into the defense, and they're not seeing any results. That has to really get under Mike Gundy's skin more than anything.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I was telling somebody about that the other day because I think they use, what is it, like three or four more scholarships on defense now than offense?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something along those lines. And it's kind of a necessity in the Big 12. You just need a bunch of guys. And they've seen that, you know, they've seen the fruits of that on the defensive line. But just the secondary is just, I don't know. But then we say all that, and then Iowa State doesn't score in their last six possessions. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of any of it, honestly.
It's like I texted you during the game. This is the weirdest OSU team ever, because they, at times they look like a team that could or should win the Big 12. And at times they look like one of the worst teams we've seen.
That's not an exaggeration. They're getting torched by Iowa State at home.
That like on defense, especially at times they look like the 07, 08 defenses that couldn't stop anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know what you mean. One of the worst Oklahoma State teams you've seen in like, you know, in the Gundy era, which is, but
there's something to be said for looking terrible and then coming back to win the game. That's the 10th time a Mike Gundy team has come back from 14 points or more.
That's staggering.
That's not an accident. Like teams that find like there's an aspect to finding a way to win. A lot of it's coaching, like making adjustments on the fly, which they did against Pitt during the weather delay, that they obviously did against Iowa State for such a dramatic turnaround. And you know, good teams find ways to win, and bad teams find ways to lose. I think Iowa State now has found a way to lose two straight weeks against Baylor and Oklahoma State. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah,
that's why they have the record they do, and that's why Mike Gundy has the record he has. Is normally he. When there's level talent or he has a better team, he almost always wins, even if it doesn't look pretty in the process.
Yeah, and he said even he wasn't feeling great about the game midway.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be feeling great when Joel Anning is throwing 35-yard wrong foot touchdowns on you at home to go up 31-14.
No, absolutely not.
Joel, anyway.
And a quick point on Mike Gundy. You showed the tweet that I tweeted out about Mike Leach because you read that book about the spread offenses.
Yeah.
This is what, for anyone who doubts Mike Gundy or wants better or wants to win a national championship, just look at Texas Tech. Very similar program to Oklahoma State, whether you want to admit it or not. They're probably very equal in terms of how good of jobs they are. They're mid-tier jobs in the Big 12. Since Mike Leach won 9 games his last year at Tech in 2009, and he won 9 games last year at Washington State, one of the worst Power 5 jobs in the country. And since he's left Texas Tech, they haven't won 9 games. That can happen. That can happen at Oklahoma State. I know people don't want to believe it because they have a nice stadium, which people aren't showing up to, which we'll get into, I'm sure.
Oh, my gosh.
But for anyone who thinks, you know, man, OSU deserves better than Mike Gundy, just it can go that way really quick.
Yeah.
If you hire somebody else.
Yeah, I agree. Mike,
look at Oregon. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You think they have shiny facilities? I mean, they want Chip Kelly back. So, I mean,
I bet they do.
That's what I caution people. I know most people are on board with Mike Gundy. I get that. But there is a faction that's always like, well, why shouldn't we expect to win a national title? Well, you can, but you can also not win 9 games every year, too.
Yeah.
So, anyway, off my soapbox.
What'd you think of the uniforms? You were there in person. How'd they look?
Did you remember my prediction?
I think you went. Is that our first? Yeah, all I do is win,
man, no matter what. 3 for 3. Orange, black, orange. All right, I'm done.
That was good. That was well timed.
Looked awesome.
You nailed it. Was that the first 3 for 3 of the year?
That was the first 3 for 3, although it was an audible. You know, on the podcast, I gave you white, black, white.
You were on tilt there for a little bit.
Well, the more I thought about it, I was like, there's only 3 home games left. They're going to go all out. And I wanted to predict black, orange, black, which they will wear against Tech. I can predict that right now. You can come with me, jump on board, and get up 3 for 3 against Tech if you want. They're going to wear that against Tech. So I wanted to save that combination. So I just did the opposite.
Well, okay, I want to talk about this, but we got to talk about Chris's first. Let's get to this week's uniform review brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner. And be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. The orange pants are amazing. They're just awesome.
They were already the best piece in the arsenal.
Yeah.
They look even better this year.
Yeah, they're good. I hate when the helmet and the pants don't match. I think it's probably a sunlight issue, like a lighting deal. But
it's just hard to get an orange helmet to look like those pants do. I think it's almost, especially a chrome one, I just don't think it's possible.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But yeah, I thought it was a great look. Do you have a bunch of Uni Heisman watch list guys this week? I'm sorry about that. I feel like very scattered right now. Tiger just pulled out of the Safeway Open, and I'm like literally writing stuff while we're talking. So
you seem a little out of it.
I apologize to everybody if I'm out of it. But who's on your Uni Heisman watch list this week?
There is no watch list. I think we have a winner.
Oh, it's over.
Well, he won the game. He won the game before it even started. The picture that leaked out of Jordan Burton before the game, looking like a 1990s Florida State linebacker with the neck brace thing, the
neck
cowboy
roll.
Collar.
Yeah. It's
with
great.
Just all the accessory. Like I brought him up weeks ago, and he is only extending his lead in the Uni Heisman race is Jordan Burton. So that's my guy.
Yeah, there was some love for Derek Moncrief on Twitter. I think some people tweeted at us about him.
Mm-hmm. He overcomes his number. 36 is not a great...
Yeah, 36 is real bad.
It holds him back, but he's outlasting his number. He looked sensational, I thought, too.
Wasn't Marcus Smart 36 on the Celtics for a while?
I think he's still... Yeah, he still is.
Oh, is he still? What? Why is that? Like, how did he get...
Well, 33 is obviously retired from Larry Bird, and he had... you know, he wants number 3, I think. But I think 3 might have been taken. So he did 36 because 6 minus 3 is 3, I guess, was his reasoning. Doesn't look very good either.
No, it's not great. Mine is, I think we've brought this guy up every week, but Ashton Lampkin with the...
admired his work a long time. I keep saying it. Even back to the old uniforms.
You act like you're like a talent
Oh, these are my guys I've mentioned for years now.
You're just
getting on board.
You're discovering talent for like SNL, and you just found like Will Ferrell and like a, you know.
These are like my indie
comedy
band.
Club at like
these are my
the morning.
These are my indie bands that are going mainstream. I'm just so proud.
Yeah, he looked great with the orange arm sleeve. I'm a big fan of the sleeves.
He's always done that, and now it seems like more guys are doing it. So he used to stand out even more.
Yeah,
but he's one of those guys that just knows how to wear it. He's very Justin Gilbert-ish.
Yeah,
just with his whole ensemble.
I would like him to be more Justin Gilbert-ish with his coverage.
He played pretty well in the second half.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Okay, what else? Oh, we need to talk about the stadium, the fans.
What's happening, Kyle?
I don't know. I told somebody this yesterday. What are you doing in Stillwater on a Saturday? You're either at the library, which people...
Let's be honest. No one's at the library Saturday.
Well, people did that when we were in school, but it was people that just never went to games anyway. And,
right.
And my feeling is that like the students or whoever that are not showing up are ones that go to like the Texas game, but don't go to like the Iowa. I mean, have we become that school that like you only go to like the three big games? Is that a thing?
I think so. I mean, I think just the success that Mike Gundy's had has changed, you know, expectations somewhat. I mean, maybe they're fat and happy, the OSU fans, but it really is embarrassing, I think, more than anything. And I don't mean to call out the students. I'm not doing that because there were times that I would leave early as a student and go to the strip. You can do whatever you want in college, but I'm just judging what I see in the stands. And we had more students in the stands in 05 when OSU was awful. And that should not happen for a team that's trying to win the Big 12. I mean, alums and season ticket holders, if they don't show up, that's their money, whatever, fine. But you're already like students are already there. Like sometimes people don't want to make the drive to Stillwater, but you're already there, and it's a 2:30 game on a Saturday. What else are you doing at 2:30?
Yeah,
I just don't understand it. I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
And like, imagine if they sucked, how little people would be there.
I know. Well, this goes back to OKC Dave's asking if OSU fans are spoiled, and the remember the preseason survey thing,
right?
And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the Central Michigan loss. Maybe it's the fact that you've already lost a Big 12 game. But you still got to. It's not like you're like 2-5. You know, like you still got a chance to win the Big 12, and you're playing close games that are fun and exciting at the end. And I don't know.
You get six of them a year. I mean,
yeah.
We look forward to football season for an entire year. Yeah. You only get six of them at home.
It's weird. I
don't understand it.
It really is.
And it's been this way for all season. Like the Pitt game is a great non-conference game. That's a great non-conference game.
Yeah.
Power 5 school, and the crowd was awful. And obviously it was bad after the weather delay, which that's you can't really factor that in. But I don't know. It's weird. I don't get it. You know, I put it out there on Twitter, like, why is this happening? And I got a few responses just – they need to sell alcohol in the stadium, which I think it's silly they don't. I mean,
yeah, it is.
What are we doing?
They will eventually.
And it's just it's dumb. West Virginia
Coop.
Can. Why can't Oklahoma State?
They should sell Coop.
They should sell Coop. We'll get on that.
okay, we want to talk about a few more things, but we need to hear from our sponsor, Chris's University Spirit, real quick. Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head-to-toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit. Okay, what else do we need to talk about, Carson?
You mentioned James Washington as already like the best deep threat in school history. I'd put Dez up there too, but I did want to get your top five OSU wide receivers of all time.
Oh, wow. Like in order?
In order. I'll give you mine if you want to think.
Well, are you going just? I mean, how are you going talent? Are you going production?
Open to interpretation, but the way I look at it, what did they do at Oklahoma State? I don't care about anything else.
Yeah,
I don't care what they look like in the NFL. That's obviously a bonus, but what did they do on the field at Oklahoma State? So you want me to give you mine so you can think a little bit?
Well, I want to go first because okay. I don't want to be influenced by what your list is. So
okay.
I'm going to go, this is tough. This is, I mean, it's really hard because the top three for me are so close together.
I know.
Really the top four. I mean, I think the top five is pretty
top,
easy.
The top four is a lock.
Yeah.
Five is where it gets crazy.
Okay, so I'm going to go Rashawn, number one. I mean, I was looking at his numbers the other day. He put up 4,400 yards in his career, and they didn't throw it that much.
He played for less miles.
Josh Fields averaged like a buck 90.
That's crazy.
Seriously, the top yards per game passers in OSU history, Mason Rudolph's number one right now, 302 yards. Brandon Whedon, number two at 299. Number three, I think, is Zach at 192.
Wow.
And then Fields and Gundy were below that. So they just didn't throw it, and he put up 4,400 yards.
Rashawn has every right to be number one.
Yeah. So I'm going Rashawn one, Blackman two, just because he wasn't better than Dez, but he did more. He was more consistent. You knew what you were getting every week. Every week. He had 14 straight 100-yard games. That's a joke.
That's insane.
Dez,
that shouldn't be possible.
Dez number three, probably the most talented. And the only reason I'm putting Dez is three, Hartley Dykes is four. The only reason I'm putting Hartley Dykes four is because I didn't see him. I don't. He's probably more talented than Blackman and Rashawn. But I'm 31 years old. I'm not like 71. and then I guess I go James Washington five. I mean, in terms of production, he's going to be in the top two or three if he stays for a senior year. And I mean, he's just become, like I said, the best deep threat in school history. So I put him number five.
I like your list. We only have one disagreement.
Okay.
I have to put Justin Blackman number one.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
he is the most, he won two Biletnikoff awards as the best wide receiver in the entire country. That is insane. His 2010 year was better than his 2011 year, which is hard to believe. In 2010, he had almost 1,800 receiving yards and 21 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
In like 12 games, 13 games. No, 12 games. 12 games, he had 21 touchdowns.
Because he had to sit out the K-State game.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And he had 1,518 touchdowns in 2011. In 2011, he had 122 catches.
Yeah.
I can't ignore Justin Blackman's production.
That was the year that I predicted that Josh Cooper would have more catches than Blackman.
I know. That was a huge miss, and Nate never let you hear the end of it.
PFB Nate still tweets me.
I know. I love Rashawn. I think you have to have a qualifier for him considering the offense he played in, and still has like three of the top five games of all time at Oklahoma State. It's just Rashawn is a clear number two for me, and you could even – if you put him number one, I'm not going to argue it, but I can't ignore two Biletnikoffs and the production that Blackman had. I go three. I go Dez. Dez was like lightning in a bottle in that it feels like he played like 10 games for Oklahoma State. Well, you know what I mean?
He barely played more than that. I mean, he played like 20, I think.
Yeah, like it just – it's so sad that he got suspended for something that wasn't even a violation. It's just – it's still amazing to me that that happened. But just his sheer, I would argue he's just as good, if not better, than Washington deep ball wise.
Yeah.
I would love to see him have played with a quarterback. I love Zach, but a quarterback.
Friend of the pod. Who
could stretch the field like with like a cannon arm, you know what I mean? Because he would just go up and get everything. So I got Dez three just because I was in college too for Dez, which I think kind of heightens your respect for someone. And that's why I have him over Hartley. I'm with you. I'm 32 years old. I've seen like a few highlights of Hartley. He was very much Dez-like in his physique and size. Like he was really one of the first guys to be that big and fast at wide receiver. And it's really sad for him era-wise that the offenses weren't as good as they are now. And it's really sad that he tore his ACL. And like back then, like that was it. Like there was no fixing it. Like you're just done, which is just, that's awful. Like sucks for him, but I have him four. And I think Washington is five already. He can never play another game. I think he's five just by the fact of my honorable mention guys are DeJuan Woods and Adarius Bowman. And at no point did I ever think those two were better than James Washington. That's kind of the reasoning I have for having Washington fifth. But I did see whenever Washington had his big game against Pitt, you know, I looked up the top five or the top 10 all-time touchdown leaders, and DeJuan was five.
Yeah.
And that floored me. I had no idea he was that high. And right after the game, I ran into Donovan Woods. And I was like, hey, man, I brought it up. I was like, I didn't know your brother was fifth all-time in touchdown catch. That's pretty cool. And he was like, yeah. And he goes, he was a lot higher until Whedon and Blackman came along.
yeah, for sure.
And his quarterbacks that he played with.
Yeah, including Donovan. DeJuan was good. I mean, he was like a – I think he was like an average number one guy. If you're talking about like elite number one receivers – he was pretty, but he, I mean, if he's your, you know, if he's your number two guy, you're the best team in the country.
Right. Well, he's kind of Juwan Seals-ish, you know. Juwan Seals is a really good receiver. Yeah. He's not the number one option, mainly because they have James Washington.
Right. Right.
Other years he would be, but I thought that was an interesting list. It's hard to put those guys in order based on when they played, who they played with and all that. But I think that's a pretty solid top five.
Yeah, it is. Since we both had the same one, of course it is.
Well, we had different number ones.
Yeah. Chris Williams, my buddy that runs Iowa State blog called Cyclone Fanatic. He tweeted during the game. He said, it feels like Oklahoma State always has a 7-foot Superman at wide receiver. And some people were tweeting at me and said, when's the last time Oklahoma State didn't have a dude at receiver? Like, didn't have one, like just somebody that was awesome. Because you start going backwards and it's like, well, they have James Washington. Before that, they had Blackman, Dez, DeJuan, Rashawn, Alonzo Mays. I mean, you have to go all the way back into like the mid 90s until you get past all those guys. I think you could argue like 2014, which was Washington's freshman year. That was after Josh Stewart, maybe even 2013. Josh Stewart was maybe not in that class with the rest of those guys, but they really have had just a string of just uber talented receivers.
Well, we talked about recruiting on defensive line. They've Casey Dunn and Mike Gundy do an exceptional job at receiver. They're loaded at receiver. I mean, just loaded.
Chris have Lacy, been for years. Chris Lacy is your fourth guy?
Yeah.
I mean, that's outrageous.
Just look at Texas. They don't have one dude. Yeah. And OSU's got three or four every single season. So you got to give them a lot of credit for recruiting. And you know, going and finding James Washington at a 2A school in Texas.
He played tennis. He was pretty good at tennis.
He watched him play some doubles, and I liked what I saw.
I saw him dunk one time. It was impressive. You know, dunked in traffic, and
it really, really paid off for us. Shout out to the Mike Gundy commenter on your blog, by the way.
He's amazing.
He's awesome. It really paid off for us. Is a great Gundyism. We need to add that to our bingo card that we need to make.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Okay. We got anything else we need to touch on?
Is it Warrior Poem time? I'm not prepared. Glenn Spencer's Twitter account. I feel like every time I do this, I need to reiterate I'm reading a tweet from Glenn Spencer.
Because we might be in the final days of the Warrior Poems.
Well, someone commented recently. I was like, what is Carson doing? So I was like, well, I guess I need to preface this every time with what I'm doing. Oh, it's one quote. It's one poem this week, but it's a long one. Let me pull up my tunes here.
Okay. I wonder if OKC Dave guessed it again. That'd be impressive.
Well, this one's a little more modern than the last one, who I couldn't even pronounce. But it's two straight weeks of a boxer. We had Mike Tyson last week. This week we got Roberto Duran. So this is another cold read. I got better speakers today, Kyle. I came prepared. I don't know if I have a Roberto Duran accent. I might just read this as Carson Cunningham. Is that okay?
That's fine.
All right. Getting hit motivates me. It makes me punish the guy more. A fighter takes a punch, hits back with three punches. I am not an animal in my personal life, but in the ring, there is an animal inside me. Sometimes it roars when the first bell rights. Sometimes it springs out later in a fight, but I can always feel it in there, driving me and pushing me forward. It is what makes me win. It makes me enjoy fighting. Roberto Duran.
I'd like to see it start pushing him forward in the first quarter, in the second quarter.
He said he punched a window, so he maybe punched it like Roberto. Roberto Duran right cross to the window. I'm sure he punched a few in the first half there against Iowa State.
This is going to be another just ludicrous 10-2 season, isn't it?
That would be fun. Wow. I mean, the real kind of concerning thing is they played almost all their games at home.
Yeah, and they've not played great teams.
No, like their schedule is backloaded again.
Texas might stink. Iowa State
Texas
does
might
stink.
Be terrible. Texas is awful.
The guy that joined us at the Zach Robinson podcast, Joel Hawkins, my buddy.
Yeah,
that helped us with the sound.
Mm-hmm.
He said after Texas beat Notre Dame, he said Texas will still go 5-7, and I said you are out of your mind. And after every Texas game since then, he just texts me and says 5-7.
That's amazing.
After the Cal game, after the OU game, after the Oklahoma State game.
I think he might be right. And are you ready to face a Texas team coached by Tom Herman?
No, I'm not. I don't
say. OSU has had a reprieve for the last 5-6 years. That reprieve is about to come to an end when it comes to Texas stinking.
Yeah. You know the Kirk Cousins, you like that? Yeah, I do not like that. I do not want that.
It's not good for anybody. Now, I will say Tom Herman's coached in exactly like 20 games. He's a bit of an unknown.
He can't even beat Navy. He can't even beat the...
Well, you know, Kevin Sumlin looked like a world beater at Houston. Art Briles did too, although Art Briles was a really good coach. He just had some off-the-field issues. But Houston's a job you can win at. We'll have to see if he can win at Texas, because everyone says Texas is this great job, and I tend to agree with that, and I do agree with that. But they weren't good throughout the 80s and 90s. Charlie Strong couldn't win there. I mean, it's interesting why coaches can't win at Texas.
It's a cesspool.
As Herbie said, yeah, it's a cesspool.
Hey, is Alabama good at football?
They're pretty good.
They put up 50 at Arkansas.
Did they score 50?
49.
Yeah.
Did we both go 0-for in our picks against the spread last
week? Florida State came through for me. I got that one right.
I think I went well. A&M drew, so I didn't miss that. But I think I was 0-for the other.
Oh, we lost a A&M in game, didn't we? Wasn't it 7.5?
I think it was.
Did we get it at 7?
I think we got it at 7.
Oof, push.
Yeah.
It's going to help my lowly percentage.
But the other 6 or the other 5 I missed, just whiffed. I'm with you. You said this today. I think I'm just going to start picking them and then flipping them.
Right. Like, I'm going to make my picks, see which games I like, make all 5 picks, and then take the other side. And I'm going to do that. I'm saying that right now. I'm doing that this week.
This will be the one week you would have gone 6-0.
Yep. It's harder to go. It's just as hard to go 0-6 as it is 6-0. So.
Okay, Carson, we will be back later in the week with a guest, and looking forward to it.
Sounds good.
All right.